Vincenzo Nibali, the first Italian cyclist to win the Tour de France in 16 years. Nibali dominated cycling's greatest race nearly from the start 3 weeks ago in Britain. Reporter Lisa Bryant tells us more from Paris.
Eh bien, il égale sur ce Tour de France. Vincenzo Nibali, vainqueur!
29-year-old Sicilian Vincenzo Nibali cruised to victory on a summer's evening in Paris, winning by a total of 7.37 minutes over Frenchman Jean-Christophe Perrault. Another Frenchman, rising 24-year-old star Thibaut Pinot, was third overall. German Marcel Kittel won Sunday's final stage in a sprint finish. Nibali is the first Italian to win the Tour de France since 1998. He's also only one of six cyclists to win all three Grand Tours, France, Italy, and Spain. His victory came after pre-race favorites, defending champion Chris Froome of Britain and two-time winner Alberto Contador of Spain, bowed out earlier with injuries. Speaking from the victory podium at the Champs-Élysées, Nibali said it was one of the most beautiful moments in his life. He thanked his team and his family. Thousands of people watched the riders make their final loops in the French capital, ending a race that began in the British city of Leeds on July 5th. Matthew Antony had cycled here from London with a medical group.
We finished yesterday a four-day ride covering over 330 miles, and we're celebrating today by seeing a bit of professional cycling, seeing how fast the real people do it.
14-year-old Natalia Mestering is from Toronto.
Amazing. This is honestly an experience of a lifetime. I'm so excited to be here.
Pierre Gonard from the French city of Rouen was here with his father. The Gonard said they were happy to be on the Champs-Élysées to watch the riders finish. They've seen the Tour before in the mountains when the teams flash by in seconds. The riders lucked out on this last 137.5 kilometer leg of the Tour. After enduring stretches of rain and cold during the 3 weeks, they ended with sunshine for their last stage of the 101st Tour de France. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to Gao, Mali. That's where for 1 year, Gao's female basketball team was not able to dribble the ball or get on the court. That's because Islamist extremists who ruled northern Mali for most of 2012 imposed strict Sharia law, forcing women to cover their bodies in public. About 18 months later, French forces have pushed out the occupiers, and the team, like the rest of Mali's north, is slowly getting back on its feet. Katerina Heya met these women athletes in Gao and brings us their story.
As night falls over Gao in northern Mali, young women are practicing on a basketball court. Now that armed extremists have left, several girls in shiny tracksuit bottoms and low neck tops have joined the boys. Rama Tuture moves quickly across the basketball court's cracked surface. After 10 months of Islamist occupation and 1 year with no practice, the 19-year-old high school student is back in training.
Je vais à l'école en descendant 17h, 17h30. Je vais courir pour venir ici.
She says, as soon as classes are over for the day, she runs to practice or goes running with a friend. Toure says she doesn't get tired because she loves the game. Gao is known for its strong female basketball players, but Toure and many of her teammates had to sit on the sidelines due to the conflict that erupted in Mali in 2012.
Parce que les Islamistes ne veulent pas que
18-year-old Maria Maiga says they could not wear shorts and tank tops normally worn on a basketball court, and only boys were allowed to play. While Gao was under the occupation of Al-Qaeda-linked Islamists, women were forced to cover their bodies in public, and men and women were banned from mixing socially. Violators faced public lashing or could have their hands chopped off. Women who refused to follow the dress code were arrested. Many also say they were raped. When the Islamists first arrived, Tori says she thought that she might just cover herself up and continue playing basketball. Instead, she boarded a bus heading south to the capital Bamako, together with tens of thousands of fleeing northerners.
Dans la crise quand je quittais ici pour aller à Bamako, quand je partais là-bas, je n'ai pas entraîné.
She says it was a tough year, as she not only didn't get to play, she couldn't go to school. Tori says she really missed the game. Now, with the situation calmer, most of the girls are back home and have a lot of catching up to do. Making sure they do so is Omar Tonku Sisse, a retired coach in his 60s. He's also the founder of the Center for Training and Promoting Sports in Gao. He welcomes his kids with a smile and a cigarette in hand next to the central pitch. But he recalls the occupation with bitterness. The armed groups, they were fools, he says, and he doesn't want to be reminded of those times. As soon as Gao was liberated by French troops in January 2013, Sisse's sports center resumed its activities, but unfortunately, he says, his girls' team lost many of its best players, as many families remained displaced in the south for fear of continuing insecurity in the north.
C'est des jeunes, donc il faudrait du temps pour pouvoir les initier.
It's a young team, as you can see, he says. Many of the players have a lot to learn. Some have more potential than the others, but Sisse says they are rebuilding step by step. Meanwhile, living conditions in Gao remain difficult. Jobs are scarce. Certain food items are hard to find. Some government services are still lacking. The whole city is still recovering, along with much of Mali's north. But the team is fortunate to find friendly competitions with squads from neighboring towns. Just as fortunate, says Tore, is the fact that they can play at all with sporadic fighting persisting.
Maintenant ça va mais pas comme avant parce que avant on va jouer jusqu'à.
Tore says while she's happy to be back, Gao is not the same city. She notes that they used to play until 9, sometimes 10 in the evening, but now must finish much earlier because of insecurity. She says even when there's fighting in Kidal or Menaka, it affects them in Gao, and on those days they must be home by 6 p.m. As a reminder of the Islamists' continued presence, a French army vehicle passes by on the road opposite the Sandy Court. There are rumors of the Tuareg rebels recruiting. For these basketball players in Gao, the coach says they can play an important role in restoring the city to the way it used to be by helping to keep young people focused on positive contributions they can make rather than being lured by armed groups.
Bon, c'est ce que j'ai dit aux enfants de mettre du sérieux, hein? De se mettre dans.
Sisse says all he and many Gao residents want is the best from the girls and to help them reach out to young people to rebuild a future. Katharina Höje for VOA News in Gao.
This is Dikeme Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Basketball superstar LeBron James has turned to Twitter to help him choose which number he'll wear next season with the Cleveland Cavaliers. About 10 days ago, LeBron tweeted 6 or 23, and he let his fans on social media decide. LeBron wore number 6 during 4 seasons with the Miami Heat and with the U.S. Olympic basketball team. He used number 23 in high school and during 7 previous seasons with Cleveland. When the tweets were counted, LeBron tweeted again, 23 it is. The tweet included a photo of James holding his number 23 Cavaliers jersey on draft night when he first entered the NBA, as well as ones in a new version of the Cleveland jersey, as well as one of him in his high school jersey. Turning to athletics, the IAAF World Junior Championships officially ended Sunday in the northwestern U.S. state of Eugene, Oregon, and Kenyan runners won medals on the final day of competition, as we hear now from our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma.
Alfred Keter clocked 1 minute and 43.95 seconds to lead Joshua Masikonde in a 1-2 Kenyan win in 800 meters on Sunday. Bernard Kipyego and Titus Kipruto also clinched a 1-2 Kenyan triumph in 3,000 meters steeplechase. Ethiopians Dawit Seyaum and Gudei Tsegei won gold and silver in women's 1,500 meters, with Kenyan Sheila Keter a bronze medalist. Earlier on, Yomif Kelechi and Yasim Haji claimed a 1-2 Ethiopian triumph in men's 5,000 meters, with Kenyan Moses Letoyi placed third. Kenya's Roslyn Jepngetich and Daisy Jepkemei were second and third in girls' 3,000 meter steeplechase, while Nigerian Divine Oduduru claimed a silver medal in men's 200 meters. Staying in Eugene, Kenya placed second behind the United States of America in the final medal standings with 4 gold, 5 silver, and 7 bronze medals. Ethiopia is third, Uganda 15th, while Djibouti and Nigeria shared 29th spot out of 40 nations on the medal table.
Thanks, Mark. That's our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma. In another highlight on the last day of competition at the IAAF World Junior Championships in Eugene, American Kendall Williams set a championship record in the women's 100-meter hurdles, clock